Good evening, planet Earth. It is Thursday, March the 16th, 2023, Bo Blimp Doc. Right around 9:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time here in the great state of Utah. And it's your good friend Dan, hanging out here in Utah, waiting for the coyotes to tear open his flesh. It's your good friend Dan, running from cougars, running from gypsies, running from grizzly bear. Yes, indeed. Thursday. And how's it going out there, you could say? What's up? What's up, people? What if Adolf Hitler didn't die in a bunker? What if he didn't die in a bunker in Berlin in 1945, Bo Blimp Doc? What if instead he was sent through time? He used that bell device, De Glocken. He traveled through time. He's become dislodged in the future, which is today. Somewhere out there. What if he's around today, just lonely, wanting a friend, just sitting in some sad, sad apartment, maybe in New York City or Chicago? Adolf Hitler. You see, people have time for their cat, but they have no time for Hitler. People have time to call their moms, but no one has time for Hitler, but, you know, except your moms. We just finished crepes in bed. People have time for breakfast, but no time for Hitler. People have time to garden, to raise some crops for their bratty kids. People have time for pizza, to enjoy with a friend. After that great football match, people have time to smoke pot. And we all know how important that is. But people don't have any fucking time for Hitler anymore. People have time to floss their teeth, but no one has time for Hitler. People have time for anal butt sex with their spouse, massaging each other's junk and caressing her boobula. They buy plastic toys. They put them in holes, but holes too deep to be filled. But no one will stop to consider time for Hitler. People have time to make memes. You know, memes. But Hitler, nobody gives a fuck. People have time to eat steak and not share it, but Where or where is the time for Hitler? People have time for Elon Musk and all of his outer space bullshit. But when will you make time for Hitler? Yeah, I don't know how serious I am about that. You tell me. Time for Hitler. Next topic. So here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. What backs the US dollar? Well, it's obvious. Hellfire missiles. Now, I bring that up because, you know, if you've been keeping track of current events, it looks like we're in the beginnings of a bailout cycle again. I mean, as if it really ever ended. Silicon Valley Bank imploded a couple weeks ago, and now you have other banks, small regional banks, as they say, not doing so great. And you have all kinds of hanky-panky and weirdness from the Federal Reserve and all sorts of weird, techniques or tools or vehicles for recovering these assets or banks or other things. And it all sounds so interesting. But if you ask the question, what backs the US dollar? Ask the ghost of General Gaddafi. Dear General Gaddafi, what backs the US dollar? And he'd say, well, I'd say that pineapple grenade you shoved up my butt, that backs the US dollar. People say to Saddam Hussein's ghost, what backs the US dollar? And he'd say, you know, that piano wire you put around my neck? That backs the US dollar. My neck is stretched out. My face is turning red. That backs the US dollar. Yeah. No, what backs the US dollar is warfare. What backs the US dollar is a military-industrial complex. What backs the US dollar is the unwritten, generally unagreed upon fact that if you want to buy conventional oil on planet Earth, at least until recently, you had to use a greenback, which means just to be able to buy oil, you had to buy dollars, which means dollars got printed, dollars that didn't exist, but they got, you know, magicked into existence because you wanted to buy some fucking oil. And that's also called the petrodollar. But if you get right down to the nub of it, it's violence. It's murder. It's torture. It's spying on people. That's what backs the US dollar. It is invading the privacy of every American and, frankly, just about every person around the fucking world. That backs the US dollar. It is setting weddings on fire and schools on fire. That backs the US dollar. But if you're asking, is there some sound accounting trick, or I don't know how to put this. If you're asking if there's some type of decent, moralistic thingy that backs the US dollar, the simple answer is, you know, no. Before we go too much further into topics, I'll give you an update on my left arm. It's getting better. I had a bit of a setback a week or so ago. I slipped on some ice and smashed up my left arm a bit, and I'm still getting over that. And beyond that, you know, it's day by day. I mean, the doctor said this could take, it can take a while. It could take 6 months, and you know, it's been almost exactly 3 months since the injury. And a little more than a couple months since the surgery. And yeah, it's getting better, but it still feels weird and tight and painful, and it's hard to sleep. Beyond that, you know, I have a hard time complaining too much because way more people out there in the world have challenges I don't have. Now, I had a friend of mine tell me, Dan, you shouldn't think that way. But it's kind of the way I think, or at least I try to keep things in perspective. You know, lots of challenges present themselves in life. And some of these challenges aren't necessarily things you're going to overcome. When my sister Nancy was faced with cancer about a decade ago, she was given a challenge that she wasn't likely to overcome. She was going to die. And that by itself, you could say, well, that's, you know, that's dark and that's sad. But the challenge for my sister Nancy was how was she going to approach her death? How was she going to face it? And in my view, she faced it, you know, pretty bravely, at least as bravely as she could or anybody could. Breaking an arm is not that big a deal, but it is getting better. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure I explained that very well. I'm kind of in a crappy mood and it makes me wonder if I should even do this podcast, but I'm gonna because I made a promise. You remember the things I've been telling you, the things I told you long ago? I was there when the strange travelers gave you AIDS. And I told you, baby, I warned you. I told you about the guys from Vegas who were looking for Sarah West. They had sleek hair and grease cars and leather jackets covered in steel rivets. They spoke a two-time Charlie and sideways Sally and other sexual positions only the perverts and newlyweds know about. Because it ain't in the Kama Sutra, baby, and your butt is backed up with cheese. I told you, but you didn't care. I warned you, but you didn't care. I told you about the coming of the gear ghosts and the car fiends, about the catalytic converter, about the mayhem, and the fresh whores of East Hampton. I told you about that guy named Fred who lives down by the docks and why he goes out at night and what kind of produce he brings. I could have stood back and had, you know, my French whiskey. I could have accepted my fate while not bemoaning yours. And perhaps I could have offered you a drink of malt liquor with a side of stale pizza and rotten meat. You'd be thankful, buddy, taking that slag home to your family with pain. I kept the secret to protect, to adhere. I sanctified the Red Realm with oil magic. Yes, I sanctified the Red Realm with oil magic and the soot from an East End London fire pit rubbed into the bubula of a long-dead queen. And the king's supper is laid out with the vegetables and ale. And the cat's memory of death is very dim, I told you. I told you, my dear and lovely friend, I warned you of the amber sky. I saw the omens of the cockroach kingdom while taking the tram to Velvet Village. I was there when the 9 elf armies relented before Scrib. And the various angle iron brigades were shut down after beating all those white people to death. The Gronkus Lords, they mean nothing to us now, but I did warn you. When the Hooker Republics of Chop and Chaz were formed, I guided you through that turmoil. I made my bread with their saccharine treat. Spice and blood mixed with lies and dirty cash. The mayor would have 3 plastic tubes inserted into his anus, and the chief of police would roast marshmallows near the reservoir. My girl Dez, she would give them all head near the Burgermaster off of Aurora, and your Genghis protein would stain her dress. My girl Dez, she had a touch-up stick and some Bondo, so it was okay. But I did tell you, didn't I? And Dendra, the skeel bitch, she rode hard in the night as a storm rose and the winds blew. Her lover, Jin, had 9 lead pipes he carried in a satchel, and he'd use those damn things in a pinch. Dendra ruled Zone 6, and all the Chud and Trog and Morlock obeyed her reign. But nothing lasts, baby. She would be chased through the streets, rocks and fruit being chucked at her, the people screaming, "You didn't tell us about the dollar." Dendra and her banker whore allies dug in deep near Gaslight Park, off of Lake Union. The kite flyers bought dog music, and the fires of the dead lit up old Ivy Town. But Dingus was aroused, and Dendra was in descent. The path was messy and filled with foreclosures and PhD hookers, moms and dads, pimping and whoring, just to get a few turnips and a snail. And I did warn you, didn't I? Didn't I tell you? But you fuckers bought Bitcoin. I canceled the phone and the cable. I set my alarm clock to snooze. I stopped dreaming about your wicked world and its twisted path. I will engineer a ship to take me away beyond the battles at 20 miles up. I told you about those lesbian near-space navies battling in vacuum ships at 150,000 feet. I told you about Admiral Lestra and her Funket fleet, and the busty sailors that pilot that dreadnought so far above the earth. Rocket planes and rail guns, flashes of light, scantily clad pilots pushing their skyships to the limit, all of them at odds, and for what, my love? They battle for my affection, my spunk, my love grease. These lesbian navies high above the land, murdering each other so that they might have some of my Sclevis oil? And I told you what would happen. I said that this was a tipping over and history was unstuck. I reminded you that all things turn to dust and that history has become unstuck. I took you on fancy journeys to a Thai-style sex paradise filled with red curry and sweet python passion. And you ignored me because history has become unstuck. History didn't end, baby. I told you this. History has become unstuck. But I did tell you, didn't I? I did warn you, didn't I, motherfucker? Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. It's a dangerous dance between the pragmatic and the beautiful, and somewhere in the mix is art. It's a dastardly tango between the useful and the attractive, and somewhere in there is beauty. There's this dangerous, strange dance between the scientific and the aesthetic, and somewhere in there is expression. You know what I mean, baby? It's a dangerous dance between the pragmatic and the beautiful. What does Dr. Freckles mean by this? It's a dangerous dance between the pragmatic and the beautiful. Somewhere in the mix is art. Well, the famous architect Frank Lloyd Wright, and if you're not aware of Frank Lloyd Wright, he is a famous architect from the 20th century, really the early to mid-20th century. Some people have argued that Ayn Rand based her main character, Howard Roark in The Fountainhead, on Frank Lloyd Wright. I don't know that that's actually true. But he was a very impressive architect, and some even considered him an artist. And, you know, the truth is, a lot of people in the world of architecture are also artists. It's just that when you're creating architecture, it's not just about creating something beautiful. It also has to be functional. You know, I think Frank Lloyd Wright said, form follows function. Form follows function. Dangerous dance between the pragmatic and the beautiful. You know, when you look at automobiles from the 20th century, prior to the first oil shock, and let's call the first oil shock the early 1970s, but prior to that, one could make an argument that American cars were this weird mixture of pragmatic features, you know, useful features that get you from A to B, but also other features that really aren't optimal from a scientific or engineering perspective, but you could consider them beautiful. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of people beat up on cars, specifically cars that run on gasoline, and I don't want to get into that topic right now, but it does seem like an era in automobile manufacturing kind of died in the 1970s and 80s. After that, it was all about pragmatic. You know, what is optimal? What is sleek? What is streamlined? What's going to give you the best gas mileage, the best horsepower, you know? But the beauty of a car, of its tail fins, of its curves, of its color, all that kind of just sort of went away. And then by the time you get to today, a lot of cars, no matter who makes them, look the same. And you could say, well, Dan, that's the nature of physical reality. That's the pragmatic nature of things. And I agree. But somewhere between the pragmatic and the beautiful, you have art. If it's only pragmatic, I guess you have a tool. I don't know. Next topic, kind of beat that dead one dead. Here's another quote from Dr. Freckles. The family doctor should also be an expert with respect to surrounding ecology. Dr. Freckles, what does that mean exactly? Let me tell you. I think there's this opportunity to reinvent the family doctor as someone in your life that is not simply educated on pharmaceuticals and what drugs to give you, but rather is educated on your whole life vis-a-vis where you live. And I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but the idea is simple, that your family doctor should not be a doctor in a vacuum. It's like that nasty train wreck in Ohio, about a month ago, I guess now. Very toxic, very poisonous vinyl chloride, right? And the story is that the story isn't over. I mean, actual information coming out of, I think it is, East Palestine or something? But actual information coming out is showing that, railroad workers are getting sick as part of the cleanup. And, you know, who knows what they're breathing in. Some dude was saying phosgene. Well, phosgene, that's just a scientific name for mustard gas. And mustard gas is one of the chemical weapons they used in World War I. I think a good family doctor should be interested in the ecosystem. I think a good family doctor should be interested in the water, in the air, in the soil. I think a good family doctor should go beyond just, you know, being excellent at being a physician, but they should be cognizant of their surroundings. And I don't know if this was ever true. Like, I don't know if doctors throughout history tried to have a more holistic understanding of what the word health means. But I think at this point in human history, it would be useful if family doctors were also scientists of sort, interested in the state of things in your community. And I don't mean this in some political advocacy sense. I don't mean this in terms of what is currently considered the environmental movement. That's not my point. I mean this very practically, that there are things that can happen in your community that can affect your health. And your doctor should be aware of them, probably more aware of those things going on than the latest handout or leaflet or flyer from the pharmaceutical rep. But that's just my opinion. Next topic. Am I right? Yep, next topic. Okay. I got a couple of news articles. I don't know if I'm going to read them all, but I'm going to cover them. The first one is out of Augusta, Georgia. And this article was published on February the 24th, which is a couple weeks ago. And the headline is, Georgia woman drives SUV into Popeyes over missing biscuits, police say. Shit, this is crazy. A Georgia woman has been arrested after police say she purposefully crashed her vehicle into an Augusta Popeyes over missing biscuits. Oh, you can read the rest of this yourself. I'm not particularly interested in all the details. Another article, headline, I went to Dunkin' for grilled cheese. I got a paper sandwich instead. Now, this is absurd because what you see is a sandwich with that little bit of, you know, separation paper there. You know, when you get like cheese sometimes, there's paper there, wax paper usually, that separates slices of cheese. And it turns out that this woman got some type of cheese sandwich with one of those papers in it. And again, this isn't great, but how is this a news story? You tell me, I have no idea. And then the third article is from the 13th of March. Man sues Buffalo Wild Wings. Man sues Buffalo Wild Wings and claims boneless wings are just chicken nuggets. The class action seeks to challenge the false and deceptive marketing and advertising of Buffalo Wild Wings boneless wings, reads the lawsuit. This is absurd bullshit. Why did I group these three articles together? Well, let's get a few things out of the way. I've been trying to eschew the news to some extent in my podcast in recent weeks. I can't help but mention things like the Ukraine or the potential banking crisis because, hey, it's stuff that's going on. But I have no idea how real any of it is. My position with respect to the banking situation is really quite simple. They're going to keep the plates spinning as long as they can, period. I don't care what world you're in right now, if you're in the real estate world or the investing world, or even if you're in crypto, they're going to keep the plates spinning as long as they can. There's no goal for a recession or soft landing. You know, your guess is as good as mine, what happens at the end of the story. But the key message is this: Jerome Powell is not going to subdue inflation, and he can't allow deflation. Because at this point, no matter what the Federal Reserve does, what happens next is probably economic collapse. That's my opinion. I could be wrong. We shall see. But these articles about the Georgia woman and her Popeye's missing biscuits, or the other woman who went to Dunkin' Donuts for her grilled cheese. Why do you go to Dunkin' Donuts for a fucking grilled cheese? I have no idea. Or the dude suing Buffalo Wild Wings for mislabeling boneless wings. These stories are of interest to me because they point to a certain kind of crazy. And I've seen this crazy over the last decade. It kind of started about 10 years ago when it became obvious to me that shrinkflation and downserving were the way of things, that we would get less and less for what we, you know, were willing to put money down for, whether it was a lunch or a can of chili or a fifth of, you know, Maker's Mark. They were caught. Maker's Mark was caught about 12 years ago, I think, maybe 13. Watering down their whiskey, you know. And so for those of us sensitive to shrinkflation and downserving, we have seen the trend for more than a decade. A lot of people are showing up to this party late from a cognitive perspective. They're only slowly processing how badly they've been served in terms of the current economy. And I'm not saying that they're all shitheads or whatever. It's just that, you know, at this point, I want to say get over it, because this is nothing. This is nothing. This is very petty shit. You know, not getting biscuits, a piece of wax paper in your cheese sandwich that you got from the donut shop, or whether or not you got some chicken nuggets or boneless wings, it's irrelevant. It's not going to amount to much in the very near future. That's how I see it. You can say I'm mean. Dan, you're mean. You're a mean, angry old man because you don't understand people want the food they ordered. And what I'm telling you, buddy, is you're not going to get from this Death Star cafeteria what you think you deserve. You're not. You're going to get whatever swill, whatever poop pie, whatever chunk of dingus they'll stick on a bun, and you will pay for that. You'll pay for your pink slime. You'll pay for your maggot sauce. You may even at some point pay for your fucking cricket flour soup, and you'll be happy about it. Or maybe you won't be happy, but does it fucking matter? Because I can't tell you, buddy. I cannot tell you. Next topic, pal. I don't know. So I found something on the internet the other day, and it was like one of these flyers you'd put up for a lost puppy. But it wasn't that. It was a flyer showing an old woman, and at the top of the flyer posted on a power pole or telephone pole, it says, warning, I breathe dust. And again, this is in the notes. So if you come to this from Spotify or whatever, this is in the notes. Warning, I breathe dust. I put all kinds of dust in a bag and breathe it. It makes me feel like Superwoman. Warning, I do this. I breathe dust. Give me a call. Give me a call if you have dust for me to breathe, or convince me to stop. Either way, I'd love to receive your call. 401-830-4965. I breathe dust. And it's funny. I don't know how, but this feels connected to the stuff about the biscuits and the McNuggets and finding some wax paper in your grilled cheese sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. You know? I breathe dust. I put all kinds of dust in a bag and breathe it. It makes me feel like Superwoman. Warning, I do this, but please give me a call if you have dust for me to breathe or you want to convince me to stop. Either way, I'd love to receive your fucking phone call. I don't know. It's so fucked up. But just looking at this old lady on this flyer, it says, I breathe dust. I don't know why, but it touches me. It's weird. It's hard to explain. It's like pointlessness. At this juncture in the game, this kind of pointlessness is just kind of sexy and attractive. I don't know, but you can call that woman and ask her about why she breathes dust, okay? It's hard to say why any woman does what she does. I'm not a misogynist, you know, necessarily. But it's hard to say why a woman does what a woman does, right? I mean, she took the jab. So I left her on the slab. She did a lot of cocaine, and it drove her insane. She took the long way home. Now she lives as a hooker in Nome, Alaska. She bought a crazy dog. It chased her into the bog. She bred with laser cats. Her babies were rabies bats. She rode the camel thong. She finished off diesel bong. She stole my brazen heart just because I had to fart. She smoked a Mongo joint. I didn't even see the point. She ate her girlfriend's V, made her blind so she couldn't see. She hunts the wild boar because she's a nasty whore. She killed the mean old man. He came from Robot Japan. She sucked a giant cock. now she looks like Spock. She found the golden bow. Her heart was cold as snow. She danced with Michael J. Her heart said it was okay. She formed a sacred cult. Her boyfriend's name was Bolt. Bolt Cockmeyer. She filmed JFK. She screamed, "It's not okay." She heard her grandma Joan. As she stabbed her, she could hear her moan. She drank the monkey paste. Her turds expelled with haste. She cast a Mexican curse. Her boyfriend now has a purse. She is my jungle queen. She had to make a scene. She built a castle wide with her pimp daddy by her side. Yeah, I don't know if that sounded misogynistic, and I just don't fucking care. Like I said, I wasn't totally in the zone for this podcast. Just to revisit, if anybody asks you what backs the U.S. dollar, it's really kind of simple. It's a lot of assassins and a lot of thieves and a lot of crooks. It's a lot of shitty people. It's a lot of bombs and a lot of bullets. If you want to know what backs the U.S. dollar, imagine as if Hieronymus Bosch had been alive during World War I and someone asked him to paint, you know, a tapestry of World War I. I think Hieronymus Bosch would have captured it. And that would be a good example of what backs the U.S. dollar. That's it, brothers and sisters. I won't say any more. It's not about full faith and credit. It's not about honor and respect. It's about murder. That's what backs the U.S. dollar. Have a great rest of your fucking Thursday.